This recording, England 76, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Karma Gets a Cure is copyright Douglas N. Onaroff, Jill McCullough and Barbara Somerville.
Well, here's a story for you. Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district of the territory. So she was very happy to start a new job at a superb private practice in North Square near the Duke Street Tower. That area was much nearer for her and more to her liking. Even so, on her first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror, and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and a fleece jacket, picked up her kit, and headed for work. When she got there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot and mouth disease, which was surprising because normally you would only expect to see it in a dog or a goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel sorry for the beautiful bird. Before long, that itchy goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling, "Comma, comma," which Sarah thought was an odd choice for a name. Comma was strong and huge, so it would take some force to trap her. But Sarah had a different idea. First she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with her palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally, she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. In no time, the goose began to tire, so Sarah was able to hold on to Comma and give her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped her off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Almost immediately, she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of medicine. Sarah warned that this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. "I can't imagine paying so much," but Mrs. Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure. I was born in Cambridge originally, and generally, you know, the accent is fairly upper class, not too upper class. I then moved to London when I was about 21, so it's been about 8 years now since I've been in London, and it was mostly the East End of London. I think, you know, the main influences, gosh, my mother does have quite a strong African accent anyway, and she's well spoken as well when it comes to her English. So that probably influences me slightly. I think we're all quite well spoken, I think. You know, sometimes when I'm talking to friends, I'm probably less well spoken and a bit more kind of London and twangy about things, or a bit lazier in my speech patterns. But when I'm sat down definitely with my close members of my family, then we're always talking quite clearly and succinctly and like really pronouncing things properly and articulating quite a lot. I think when I first came to London, I kind of got the impression that, that my voice didn't apparently suit what people wanted to expect me to talk like, because I'm sort of a young black female, so they were sort of expecting me to be talking like a Londoner, and I wasn't, and I think that kind of actually took on board quite a lot of different reactions from both black people and white people. I use my voice in my work at the moment because I sing a lot. So like last night we did a gig, which means I'm really tired and probably a bit more gravelly than I normally am, probably a bit more nasally than I normally am, just generally a little bit vocally tired. So that's what I use my voice a lot for singing, lots of belting and lots of different pitches and stuff like that. But I quite like my accent, but sometimes I listen to myself back and I think, yeah, wow, it's not really what I kind of thought it was. But that's okay, that's fine, but it always surprises me a bit. I think, wow.